Dieter and Jake on a Tuesday. I'm in Alameda. Jake is joining us from the year 1987.
That's right,
with folks. That sweater and that potato camera you got going on. Congratulations.
That's right. Buddy. That's right. We have forgotten our devices. We have forgotten our devices from this century. We're taking it back to the 90s. So I am going to actually restart and fire in from dial-up. Going to log in over AOL with one of those mouses that has like a spinning ball on it.
Oh, yeah.
I used to play Madden 99 on my uncle's Gateway
computer. There we go.
And that was a special time. That is,
there we go.
Fond memories.
I was Clinton a big Portis. Fan of NHL 2002, I believe.
Oh yeah, NHL Hits 2002 is the best best game
that
ever
was
made.
That was console, and it is an exceptional game. I knew that as a New Jersey Devils fan, you would say that because Scott Stevens was on the cover. But I was a huge Jeremy Roenick fan as a kid. He, of course. Ooh. Didn't stick around with the Blackhawks, my childhood team, went to the Flyers. So I'm like, I'm a Flyers fan now, baby. And Eric Desjardins at defense.
Wow.
Unstoppable in the early.
The Avs were also the best team in that game.
I know. And every year I'd play them in the Stanley Cup final and lose in like six or seven games, even on low settings, because I was a child.
Respect.
We are here to talk 49ers football, ostensibly. We could change at any moment. We could just talk about early 2000s. EA Sports video games and or Midway, but I think we do need to address a couple of things that have come up now over the last couple of days. So one, Christian McCaffrey is indeed done. And then, yes. Oh yeah, just for fun, no more Jordan Mason either. He's injured and is out for the rest of the season. So it's Isaac Guerrero time. And for everybody who was hoping that the 49ers would just pack it in and play all the young guys, they don't even have to pack it in. It's naturally happening. The universe finds a way. Life finds a way. And I don't know who's left to try. I guess the Nuge. And I guess Jacob Cowing as an actual receiver. And it doesn't feel like we're far off from seeing that either, Jake.
No. It's all coming to a beautiful, glorious end. As we had ordained.
Just walk into the flames.
It's and I want to be clear about the best case for them and how they should approach it. They should not try and lose, which they will not do, right?
No,
that's not going to happen. The best case for them is to try and maybe win one game for their mental health, lose on like bad special teams errors, but like put together semi-competent games on the ends of the football that Kyle Shanahan would say really matter. Mm-hmm. And that way you can just fire special teams coach, say, all right, we lost it that way. And lose badly to Lions, whatever, it's the Lions, and you're competitive in the other games. Maybe you win one of them, but whatever. But realistically, you want this thing to be over as quickly as possible so you can wind it down. You get some rest for some of your veterans, which is already going to be the case. But just so you don't bring Trent Williams back, you don't bring Nick Bosa back, you just let this thing wind down naturally. And then you evaluate everybody else on the roster and you say who actually belongs, who's worth keeping.
Can you properly evaluate players on this roster with the state of this roster? Like, it's one thing if you were to just take the point a step further, right? So I don't know if Trent Williams will ever be healthy again, but say Nick Bosa is like, hey, we're ready to rumble, I want to play. Wouldn't that help you in better evaluating if Talanoa Hufanga can still stick around on this team, or if Dre Greenlaw can still stick on this team, or if your young safeties are effective? Like, wouldn't having your best possible roster, which is still a limited roster, wouldn't that help your evaluation? Because otherwise we're just doing preseason again.
No, that's fair. That's totally fair. And I do think if Bosa and Williams are ready, they will come back.
Yeah.
But it is something where if, you know, there's three games to go and they're out of it, then I think, and they're still like limping around, then you might shut it down. But if you can get, you know, two, three more games of real evaluation in this last five game stretch, that would be great. I do think that matters. If you have an actual pass rush with teeth, I think defensive line is, oddly enough, like defensive end, they're probably going to sort of stick on defensive end with most of what they have. I mean, they kind of signed Floyd and Yetur Gross-Matos, and they have Okuwanu. Like, outside of that, what I think Robert Beal is probably stuck on this team. So you get some evaluation with Bosa and with Trent, and that helps. Jalen Moore has actually been okay.
He has. Ben Bartsch was fantastic.
Ben Bartsch was glorious in this game. That was
he might one have of had my the best performance of anybody in the game, not named Christian McCaffrey.
He was like the only guy on the Niners who like was not slipping for the most part. Ricky Pearsall, who has been criticized endlessly, and I will defend him later, slipped more than any person I've ever seen them seen in this game. tranches, baby, tranches. Double A, triple A, doesn't matter. Buy it all.
Jake is out here ready to go bet it all on the Baltimore Ravens. Here's
Jamal Lewis. That was the first play. That was the first football game I ever saw. By the way, I was
talking to Dante Whitner on KMBR, and he's like, "Oh, I've never been injured, but I did have Jamal Lewis run through my chest and knock the wind out of me. That would do it.
That is a man who you do not want to run at you. He was relentless. I also think he was a criminal. I might be wrong about that.
Baltimore Ravens running back. Who's to say? Okay. This is something that we went in a little bit with on Sunday night. We were all emotional. We were all charged up. We had all just wasted hours of our lives watching men play football in the snow. And this is something that it has now reached ahead because team loses, fire head coach, tale as old as time. I got the Warriors game on behind me right now. I mean, if I had a nickel for every time I had somebody tell me they're going to fire Kerr just after a loss, I would have as much money as like Draymond Green right now. Because
Warriors fans are the most hysterical, I think, of the Bay Area fans in terms of
fan is short for fanatic, and they don't have to be rational. They shouldn't be rational. If the idea is that it's fun, and I'm not going to lecture anybody if their idea of, trust me, I can't lecture anybody on the terms of if their idea of fun is bitching and complaining. Trust, I get it. I get it. That's my idea of work. I've monetized my inherent pessimism. Not a bad move. Regardless, I understand that that is the knee-jerk thing. It is our responsibility as podcasters, the sacred oath that we take with an audience, to point out that last year the San Francisco 49ers had the number one offense in the NFL. They were a team that scored first in overtime of the Super Bowl. They lost, but they scored first in overtime of the Super Bowl. And had one of the greatest offenses in the history of the NFL, at least by some metrics. The idea that Kyle Shanahan does not know how to call plays is so patently absurd to me, even after watching a garbage season, that I just can't give credence to it. And I'm glad that Griffin has made this specific point. I'd like to see Shanahan start getting crazy with some of these plays. Okay, we all want to see something more interesting. Kyle is certainly not want to get wild when times are trying. That is not his MO. I wish it was. It'd be a lot more interesting than what we're watching. But this second part of this comment is what I want to hammer on because it's a great point, and I'm not sure if it was made consciously or subconsciously, but it's a great point. I was watching some 2022 and 23 highlights, and the offense looks like a completely different animal scheme-wise. Yeah, because he had completely different animals on the field. Of course it looked different scheme-wise. You had Christian McCaffrey. You had a prime Deebo Samuel. You had a quarterback who wasn't afraid of dying because his offensive line actually did protect him. Not great, but better than most. Think about how many times Brock Purdy has scrambled this year as his second read. Think about having Brandon Ayuk, a $30 million wide receiver, plus George Kittle. Think about just having Juwan Jennings as someone you only bring on the field for third downs. This team was sick, and this team currently is sick in a very different deathbeddy way. And
that was me earlier this week.
Correct. And I'm glad that you're better, buddy, even though it did. Apparently they gave you some medicine and it reversed time. You're Benjamin Buttoning it.
That's right, baby.
It is very difficult to draw up cool schemes for bad players. This is not, I'll keep going back to this a million times in a row. Army, Navy, and Air Force Rice now. They just hired a new head coach. When you don't have the skill position players, when you don't have the dudes, when you don't have guys who can win one-on-one, they tighten the game, they run the ball, they win with simple technique, fundamentals of football. I'm not saying that's what Kyle's doing, but it is. He is certainly a naturally conservative person, and he is more want to tighten it up, simplify, let's handle the basics, than to throw caution to the wind. He didn't throw caution to the wind enough when he had sick-ass players. He's sure as hell not going to do it now. I have criticisms of Kyle. You have criticisms of Kyle. They are micro. The idea that he doesn't know how to coordinate an offense is laughable. Does he know how to coordinate this offense? Not as well as he could, to be sure. And we'll see moving forward.
I think you go back to this offseason and the way this all started, where you don't have any of the dudes. None of these guys are really here in training camp. Pearsall had the shoulder thing before he got shot. You had Ayuk holding out. You had McCaffrey not really involved at all. You had Trent Williams holding out. There are a number of other injuries that I can't quite forget. And so you go into the season and they're understandably sort of going off the framework of last year, right? And if you go off the framework of last year, the thing is funneled around McCaffrey, where McCaffrey is a matchup nightmare and any option route is a win, right? And you can work every single thing off of that and you make defenses account. When you lose McCaffrey, you do not have an answer at the running back position in the passing game because Jordan Mason is not a receiving running back. He can't really run routes at all. You don't really trust anybody else. So then you're fundamentally flawed there. You go into the season, Brandon Ayuk is a guy that, one, is not good right away, and two, Brock Purdy doesn't trust him. One, because he's dropping the ball, and two, because they have not built up any rapport. Ricky Pearsall, again, has been shot, so he's out for the first 8 weeks, and he didn't practice anyway. Mm-hmm. So you're relying on Juwan Jennings, who's great, and you've got Debo Samuel, who's, we've talked about Debo.
He was once a great player.
I agree. I didn't interpret that as a dig on Kyle at all.
No. I do think that it's a good point from Griffin in that you want to see more plays like the one with Garendo. But note, as you just mentioned, Ricky Pearsall, who was in the backfield next to Garendo on that cool play. That play is built for Debo. That play was ripped off, by the way, strictly from Green Bay.
Every team in the league is ripping that off.
Cleveland was ripping it off last night. Green Bay ripped it off from, I think, Kansas City. And you know what? When I was putting together that little intro video that I did, guess which play I saw? I'm not even kidding. I have it cut up on my computer from the 30s. Same play. Everything comes back. And so
we broke it all down. Nobody watched, but the algorithm didn't look favorable.
Fair enough. It's merely you're having to put Ricky Pearsall back there. So now you have a rookie in a situation. It's very difficult to put together a flush when you don't have good cards. And Kyle is not a good bluffer. He's not a good chip manager. There's a lot of things that he's not good at. What he needs is to feel comfortable across the board. When you have one guy out on this offense, and we've seen this time and time again, the thing falls apart. Kyle is incapable of doing basic pragmatism. I mean, George Kittle's out. They lost both games. They lost both games.
You look at the record over the year when they missed Debo, it's insane.
Right. And they've been missing that Debo Samuel all year.
Correct.
So that matters. It matters. You know, think about, they got Christian McCaffrey because the Debo thing was fading. Right, Debo, the shtick was fading. The book was out on how to stop
it. Right, it wasn't working.
Which was, you can do man-to-man.
And then McCaffrey answered that, and that's where they start the season. And then so teams can just play man-to-man. And every team ripped off, we talked about it, for the first half of the season. And because of the way the second half has gone, we haven't talked about that as much. But that was the core of this offense being the problem. Because this is a team that had to win offensively, right?
Right.
Because the defense was never going to be good enough. The special teams was a nightmare. The offense had to solve it. And because defenses threw man-to-man, what they did is they threw man-to-man at them aggressively, press man, like a third of the time, which is a lot, even for teams that didn't traditionally do that. They ripped off the Chiefs and they all did it. And then they would run overload blitzes and simulated pressures to one side because they knew the 49ers wouldn't pick it up. Right. And even if they were ready for it, you're asking Purdy to throw hot and fade usually with pressure coming either to his blind side or even if it's in his face, he has to fade away and throw a crazy, impressive pass, usually to an option route or a hot on a guy who, without Christian McCaffrey, is probably not going to win or is going to win just barely. And so that's what they had, which is not an answer on offense and explains a lot of the red zone troubles because it just gets more condensed. And if you don't have answers in the middle of the field on those situations, you're not going to have them in the red zone. They also struggled up front to block, which is another answer for why they couldn't score because you're not getting any push up front. You can't convert in those really tough sledding moments. So that's where it all is. And that's because the offense had to solve it. So if the offense isn't solving it for this team, they were never going to achieve anything.
And let's be clear about this. The NFL is a league of advancements and adjustments, right? Everybody is out trying to put their best foot forward, trying to push the envelope, especially on the offensive end. And then once teams have something that they think that can counter this, you adjust. Well, the entire league had the adjustment to Kyle's offense that he had on the field last year, right? They watched Baltimore. They watched Kansas City. They watched, you know, they saw good coaches, defensive coaches, Mike McDonald, Steve Spagnuolo, put out great schemes, throw caution to the wind, all in aggressive schemes. They watched that film. It was pretty easy to copy because it wasn't that complicated. It didn't require great players. It just required a commitment to the bit. And you had, as you noted, constant press man-to-man and overload blitzes on third down. How have the 49ers adjusted? They, with man-to-man, they haven't done anything. They've merely said, oh, Christian McCaffrey will come back. That's not an adjustment. That's a hope and a prayer. And by the way, it never materialized because the one good game Christian McCaffrey had, it was in the snow, so you weren't throwing the ball. And then what adjustment have they made to overload blitz? Zilch, nada. It's week 13. They haven't adjusted at all. They're not allowing Brock to change protections at the line or Brendel to change protections at the line or creating foils to what they expect would be overload blitzes. It's as if they think that it will never happen to them again, and yet every week it happens repeatedly to the point where it's now just commonplace. It's easy practice because the 49ers have shown zero adjustment whatsoever to something that they have now seen 100 times.
Yeah, or a framework to say, okay, in these situations where we expect this to come, we don't want Brock to have to think about protections often, right? Because they're asking a lot of them. And part of the problem is the way they run their offense with the cans. There's been some really absolutely dumbfoundingly terrible dialogue about audibles and all that stuff that like Brock, like they build it into the play, which is like he has options. He can change the play. And the way this thing functions is you just change to the other play. And because you're getting the other look, because you're getting a different coverage. And sometimes it doesn't work, but it's also like it's hard for these modern offenses to say audible, change to another play when there's all these motions, all these things built off of it. That's also the reason it's tough for them to change the protections and do a lot of stuff, because how often are they going up the line of scrimmage and they've got 4 seconds left to snap the ball? So a lot of that is problematic, and a lot of that is on Brock's shoulders, and he's trying to diagnose a lot of stuff. I think where we go with this is if Brock is the guy, which they're going to pay him, that's just the reality of the situation, and Kyle trusts him, you should say, all right, on key downs, Brock, like, what are you looking for here? Give him the power to say, all right, on these key situations, maybe going forward on these like third and gotta have it, we make an adjustment where we say, okay, Kittle stays in, you bump the running back to the other side. I don't know what it is, but you give him some leeway.
It's pretty straightforward. Everyone's been saying that Kyle needs to hire an offensive coordinator. I got an idea. Brock Purdy's your offensive coordinator now. Okay, that might sound like, oh, that's ridiculous. No, you have to give your $60 million quarterback the autonomy to make micro audibles. There was a push in the early 2000s, so this is coming up in a couple of years for you here, Jake. There was a push in the early 2000s for something called a line item veto from the president. Okay, I believe it was Clinton who pushed for it first and then Bush too. So the idea is that instead of having to veto the entire bill, that the president could then just take out lines. And in fact, I believe that even Bush too, George W. Bush, suggested that he could amend lines. It never went anywhere. But I always think about the line item veto. Brock doesn't have the ability to line item veto anything. He can veto the play and go to another play that Kyle gave him. But he doesn't have the ability to take George Kittle and bump him out should he see a matchup that he likes or a possibility that he likes. He doesn't have the ability to stop a motion or change a protection or move a running back to the other side. It is simply one play or the other play. That's it. That's it. So why are you paying a guy $60 million? I'm not saying that Brock isn't one. No one's ever suggested that Brock's not capable of doing what I just said. Kyle just won't let him. And if you're going to pay a quarterback $60 million, or just let's just call it what it is, top of the market. If you're going to pay that quarterback top of the market, he needs to have that autonomy to best put his team in the position to score or to succeed would be a more likely thing. If Kyle's ego is the thing that's in the way, and I can't see any reason other than ego, which is I am smarter than you, you don't know, you don't get the power to do that. If Kyle's ego gets it too far in the way, then clearly we got bigger issues and they shouldn't pay Brock Purdy anytime soon. Because Kyle can never allow somebody to have that kind of power, and you have to be given that kind of power almost contractually with that big of a contract.
Yeah, yeah. I do think there will be more questions next year once that money comes in. I think you can simultaneously...
They better not. What are you going to do about it? Because it's happening. I'm telling you right now, it's going to happen before the draft.
I think you can simultaneously say, this has been a poor season from Kyle, and also there's not all that much that would have mattered. Like, he could have adapted in a few ways, and this team still probably would be about where they are because the roster's not good enough and the talent hasn't been there. Simultaneously, like, you would have loved to see a lot of these adjustments, and it probably would have helped in a few games, and you would have been maybe 500, maybe above 500. So some blame definitely lies on Kyle. Some blame lays on Brock. A lot of blame. There's actually blame on literally every single person involved with this team this year. But I think the number one position that you look at and say this team is functionally flawed is the interior of the offensive line has struggled. They have not been physical enough. Defensive line, as we pointed out, has been weak. And then the linebacker next to Fred Warner has meant that with the defensive line is weak, you can't make up for that. So that right there is your fundamental problem. Your special teams is a nightmare, so you're not getting any bonus from that. So there's blame to go around everywhere.
And the idea that paying Brock $60 million is ridiculous is, one, I don't think you guys are watching the same game we're watching. Okay, and I to be very clear here, the All-22 is a very different ball game than the one that we get to watch on terrestrial TV. Not being able to see receivers downfield, sometimes Brock clearly made a bad decision, or the progression on the play was a waste of time. But ultimately, he is making a lot of plays, and he's made some really nice throws. Even on Sunday, he made some really nice throws. So
he also made a really ill-advised one.
Oh, totally.
In the first quarter,
but that one you didn't need the All-22 to see. There were about three of those.
Yeah, like do I think Brock Purdy should make $60 million? Is that a reasonable amount to pay him? Absolutely not. But that's not the conversation.
Well, no, let's break that down for a second. So they paid Jimmy Garoppolo $27 million when the salary cap was about 100, and I have it written down here. When the salary cap was $177 million, okay? They're going to pay Brock $60 when the salary cap's going to be $100 million more than that. So there's a little bit of additional cost, but $100 million more than $177 million double the money. Okay. Yeah, I get it. I get it. I think the salary cap could go up to 300 within a year, right? It went up 13% last year. It can go up another 15% this year, another 15% the year after that. So the salary cap's just going to keep going up and up and up. The NFL ain't losing any money, baby. They just keep getting everybody to give them more and more and more. The idea that you're paying Brock 60 and that's going to be a problem, I think is ludicrous because, one, you're front-loading it. Why do they have all this money?
You're not front-loading. Well,
no, they are going to. Why would you have all the salary cap money they're going to roll over unless they're front-loading?
Well, that's just how they operate, and they can do it year over year. They're not going to front-load the contract. He's going to have a bigger bump than most. Like, he's going to go from, what, a million to much higher, but he's not going to go straight to 60.
So then the other thing is, So I would rather, we got Strawberry Reacts. I'd rather draft another quarterback. So here's your options. You can pay Brock Purdy $60 million in a year or in a time when Dak Prescott makes 60, Tua Tagovailoa makes 53, Trevor Lawrence makes 55, and Kirk Cousins makes 45. So you can go back to the draft where for every Brock Purdy, there's a Trey Lance and, oh yeah, CJ Beathard too. Or what, you can pay Sam Darnold $30 or $40 million as the one available quarterback who's going to have a bidding war going for him. Kirk Cousins just got $45 million. Kirk Cousins is throwing changeups as fastballs these days. I mean, it's unbelievable. So you don't like 60, that's fine. There's a sticker shock to 60. No one likes inflation. Number one issue on voters' minds. No one likes it. But that's the cost, and it is relatively tied to the cap. And ultimately, people out here in the comments saying trade Brock for JJ McCarthy. What? Have you seen JJ McCarthy play? I haven't. You know what I have seen? Brock Purdy, a quarterback who took the 49ers to the Super Bowl last year. And not just as some bystander Jimmy Garoppolo style. Green Bay and Detroit. Watch the highlights again. Just the highlights. Tell me Brock Purdy didn't win those games. So you pay the guy what he is worth on the open market, and you do it because this is not a situation where you want to be flailing around. You want to go the Geno Smith route and hope it works out. You want to go Tampa Bay and hope it works out, because there's a lot of cases where it doesn't work out. More often than not, it doesn't work out. So
yep.
That's fine. You know what? Don't do it. See how that works out.
I think there's no world in which they don't keep him. I think when they look back on this, there's so much that went wrong. Just from the start, in terms of, I don't think Brock definitely didn't play at his best, but he also made a lot of plays when there was nothing there. There was a lot of lack of separation from the receivers. There's a lot of poor blocking. And I think that wears on a quarterback where, mm-hmm. when he could trust things to come open and he knew the timing of the offense and he knew where everything was going to be, he was firing it in there. That all works. That's when this thing is humming, right? When no one is separating or the separation's tight or he's throwing the ball and Ayuk's not catching it and he hasn't had time with Ayuk in the offseason, he hasn't had time with rookie Pearsall in the offseason, Debo is not doing much, and you're basing this on Christian McCaffrey, all that. It does wear on you. And especially when you're getting pressure from the blind side and from random spots, and you're not getting what you expected to get the way the season started.
Totally. It was arrested development. They came in again with an entitlement, and they'll say, "Oh, we'll ramp it up when we need to ramp it up." But it never got going, and they just kept waiting and waiting and waiting. Just as I was saying with the adjustments to the man-to-man stuff, it's like,
yeah.
What was the adjustment? We'll wait until Christian McCaffrey comes back. Here's our friend Frederick. Philosophical question on whether you can pay a non-alien 25% of the cap.
Yep. Alien quarterback.
I pieced it together.
I figured it out.
I got
that's actually a 90s term.
You would know.
We use.
And then the question is, if Brock is a top half star, you feel pretty good about it. Okay, well, let me throw it to you this way. Tony Wilson is suggesting something else that a lot of fans I have heard say, which is, will he take a pay cut to help the team? Okay. That is between him and his God. I don't know. But ultimately, the idea that taking a pay cut would help the team, I do think is misplaced. Not to say that Brock shouldn't take less, but every dollar matters.
If Brock were to take 40 instead of 60, they'll just go out and sign another Javon Hargrave.
Right. This is my thing. Like, do you think that this team rebuilds through free agency? No, this team has to
because
they have failed so miserably in free agency consistently, including with their own players, right? $30 million here, $20 million here. Hargrave, here's Collins. Like, the amount of money that they have stacked up, like, that's the money. It's locked in. They locked in another year of Deebo Samuel so that they could get Ayuk on the five-year deal and get Trent Williams on a three-year deal. They gave Christian McCaffrey a new contract for two more years because he asked nicely and because Kyle's like, well, we need him, clearly. He might have been right. So there is no more spending money. They spent $50 million on Leonard Floyd, Yetur Gross-Matos, and Jordan Elliott. You don't want this team spending money anymore. Now, I don't know if you want people drafting either.
Unless it's Drew Dolman.
Of course. But
for the one idea of you out there, who knows?
The idea is that this team is going to have to rebuild through the draft. They need a new offensive line. They need a new defensive line. They are going to have to draft those players. They cannot buy their way out of the hole that they have dug themselves into. They need to get younger and faster across the board. You don't buy that kind of player. You don't. You can maybe find one in the trade market, but you don't. You simply do not buy that kind of player. You buy players that are finishing pieces to a roster that is already fundamentally strong, which is why the 49ers have been spending the way that they have spent. But when you are rebuilding with a roster that is old and expensive, you rebuild through the draft with young, fast, inexpensive players.
That's why they didn't touch any of the draft picks at the trade deadline, and they'll have about, by over the cap's calculations, about 11 of them.
Yeah.
So that's what you do. I think you attack offensive line. They probably need another wide receiver. I do not think they're nearly as in disastrous shape as somebody in the comments was saying at wide receiver. If Ayuk's not right, that's a major problem. Ricky Pearsall has not been nearly as bad as people are suggesting.
He hasn't been good either.
No, he hasn't. No, he hasn't. No question. But he's also a guy who got shot and who missed training camp and who missed OTAs and came in the middle of the season and had a shoulder thing, which, granted, if his injuries linger, that's a massive problem. I'm not excusing that. I'm saying
it's too early to suggest one way or another on Ricky Pearsall, for sure.
Correct. And what I'm saying is what I see on tape is a guy who's moving very well. He looked terrible in the snow and he slipped all over the place. He looked like he had the worst cleats in the world. But when you watch him on tape, he looks damn good. Yes. He looks damn good. If you're watching the All 22, and part of the time is he's just running clear out routes. Like, you can see multiple times where he knows he's just not going to be involved in the play. And his job is to take a safety with him and set up a play for Juwan Jennings where he's not going to be targeted. You cannot blame that on a wide receiver. And I understand it's like three games of him getting, three total targets. Right. Like, yeah, that's reason to be concerned. I'm not criticizing people for saying, oh, worried about Pearsall. But I went back and I looked at all the last three games. He's moving well. Like, I don't know what else to tell you. I've seen him snap off on routes. We're going to do a little separate film thing where we look at Garendo and we look at Pearsall, because those are the two guys that are going to be really involved in this offense, you know, the rest of the way. Young guys, if you want to be optimistic, and we'll see a lot more from them.
Right.
I would pump the brakes either direction on Pearsall, on, you know, crowning him, which no one's doing, or saying he's a bust, because what I see on tape does not really indicate that at all.
They have some old players they're going to have to get rid of. I don't know if they get rid of Deebo, but whatever Deebo was, he is no longer. And that has to be adjusted for year over year if they're going to keep him around for another year. Full stop. If you're going to keep using Deebo the way that they use Deebo, and by the way, that's already been pared down. But if they're going to keep doing it, simply put, he needs to either prove that he has juice left next year, or they got it. He's a full-time kick returner and you're just paying him 17.
Have him run all the clearance. The problem is when he's not getting the ball, he loafs it.
Well, I didn't want to bring this up because it does feel like a pot shot, a pot belly shot even perhaps, but the man spends a lot of time breathing heavy on the sidelines. I understand it is not. I would be breathing heavy after running 70 yards as fast as I could with men trying to kill me too. I get it. But the guy takes a lot of plays off because he's got to catch his breath right now.
I also do wonder, he did have that pneumonia like early in the year, totally. And that wasn't addressed. I do wonder if that's like been a problem for him. You know,
I imagine that it's hard for him to ramp up to the point of. I think that at the end of the season, much like in the hockey playoffs or the hockey regular season, we're going to understand how bad that pneumonia actually was. And maybe we'll give Debo some deference going into next year. I will say this, though. He's had ample opportunity to make excuses for himself on his podcast, and he's yet to do it. But, yeah.
Yep. And, listen, we're just going off what we see, and what we see is
so
not excellent.
And again, we were Pearsall heads. We have to, you know, come
question.
With the idea that we could be anchored on this, but we have not seen anything to scare us off.
I watched a Seattle game and we'll get into it. I saw a clip where he tried to, I forget what type of route it was. He was going inside, trying to wrap around the top to get back pylon on the end zone. Tariq Woolen shut him down. It was a tough rep. Woolen stopped him. I also saw the reps where he absolutely cooked Woolen with pretty damn good routes. So I'm seeing both of it. I'm seeing a guy who's a rookie. Like if he looks terrible and next year and he's not showing signs of improving and promising, I will absolutely call that out. And I will admit 100%. My draft analysis was wrong. Happily do that.
It hasn't been remotely close to wrong yet. But it hasn't gotten there yet. It hasn't actualized yet either.
No question. There have been moments in either direction, I think, still more good than bad. But we'll see. We will see. That's what the tape is for.
But I want everybody to get their mind around the fact that Brock Purdy's going to be the quarterback. Kyle Shanahan's going to be the head coach. He might have a different defensive coordinator. He'll probably have a different defensive coordinator. He sure as hell better have a different special teams coordinator. There's going to be some pretty significant changes to this roster because they will both be clearing out and building up simultaneously. So there's going to be some weirdness, right? And by the way, that was always the plan. The plan was always to tear it down. They just wanted to be having a one hell of a yard sale after winning the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Probably you're done with Hargrave, probably done with Ward. I just think the dead cap and what you got from, you signed up Lenore, you got Renardo Green, you're probably done there. Number three, obviously you move on from Devondre Campbell, probably re-sign Dre Greenlaw for very cheap. And then you move through the draft for the most part. I do think almost as always, they always take a shot in free agency. And the only place I would look at if I'm there in free agency are people who are under the age of 28 and below,
even younger than that.
I said 28's the top. 28's the absolute top.
I think your suggestion is more defensive tackle.
Defensive tackle and interior of the offensive line. Mm-hmm. Now the Rams spent in free agency there, and it got expensive, and it didn't really work out for them. Right. I think this is the first time that they've had all those guys together. They also got really bad injury luck. That's it.
They seem too consistently.
Yes. I'll just keep saying the name Drew Dolman until it happens, and it won't. But if there was ever a guy that you would want to spend on at center, a guy who you liked at the draft, who fit your sort of mold of being a guy who can get out in the run game and get moving, Drew Dolman. To be 27.
If you're looking if you're looking for a defensive tackle under 28 years old, first round pedigree.
Javon Kinlaw?
Yeah.
I knew it.
I will say Greg Gaines looks like he's going to be available. We'll see on that one. Yeah. I like a Greg Gaines.
It's not an excellent defensive tackle
no.
group from what I remember. I think BJ Hill's a free agent, but
Kevin Givens.
He tore his pec, so.
Yeah. You can go and get Mo Hurst, something that's been suggested about a million times over. Khalil Davis, totally available.
Glad they traded a pick for him. I know it doesn't really matter, but they did trade a pick for that guy.
Well,
and I
we'll
still
see if that
cannot
pick ever actualizes. I mean, it is actually not that good of a free agency class in general, save for T. Higgins.
DeMonte Capehart, baby.
I guess. I mean,
I'm just talking about. Yeah, you got to go through the draft. You got to take, I think, honestly, you take two bites at defensive tackle in the draft. I don't even think you go like first round at it.
Hmm.
I think you want some pluggers.
Just, well, I think that if this team has learned anything, as much as we laugh about, hey, they don't have any first round picks over a couple of years and that burned them, like, I think the Rams might have had it figured out. Now, they eventually did take a first round pick this year,
yeah,
and took Verse, and he looks fantastic. But like, there was a high threshold for we're going to use this first round pick. And it had to be a player like Jared Verse, who you and I were both of the opinion, like, that dude's sick. Like, that's going to work. Worst case scenario, he's on the field 80% of the time. So, yeah, I mean,
this is folks are this. Yeah, this is
they're
good
not
stuff.
Wrong.
Absolutely. Not wrong. He will probably be gone. We'll see. There's a lot of time.
But this is a great defensive end class. This is a great offensive line class early. For the Niners' current needs, it is well situated. And so I'll throw this one more time. I think that it's easy to conceptualize losing with class all the way to a nicer pick. Don't worry about that shit. You got 12, 13 picks. If you need to move up three or four spots, you have ample ammunition to do so. If you deem a player worth
that, that is honestly a spot where I know Debo would take a massive, you take a bigger dead cap it if you don't do the June thing, but like, that's a way to package Debo is around the draft, like after free agency, once some of this stuff has happened, you package Debo with a draft pick to try and move up a little bit. It's not the worst way to do it. I mean, again, you're going to eat a bunch of dead money if you don't trade him after June 1st, so it probably won't happen, but
I get the having a
couple. I'm not saying anyone's going to trade anything for Debo.
Having a
I'm
couple
just saying
of conversations
if he...
recently post Seagate, Debo ain't going anywhere. Impression.
I'm just saying trying to trade him as a sweetener as opposed to a standalone might be a better way to go if you are going to do it. But you're probably not going to do it either way. It's one more year, I think, of him, which is fair because he's Kyle Shanahan's favorite player and they're stuck on the money. So,
you know what?
He's probably more valuable to you than anybody else.
Truth be told, if Kyle gets another year, if Kyle gets to prove it, Debo Samuel's entitled to a bad year. The idea, I've seen this, trade him while he has some value. Nope.
He doesn't.
The first part, fair enough. The second part, that's not reality. You missed it. You missed the window. This team missed the window on everything. They overdid it. It's easy to say now, but they pushed it. They pushed it.
They get high on their own supply, and that's okay. You know, they just kept doubling down. They're playing blackjack. They're just like hit it and again hit it.
Well, when you lose in the manner that they did, hard not to feel like, hey, we got to do this thing again. It's hard to mentally even take a step back. That would have been
that was the Jimmy thing, right? And I think people are probably scarred from that, where they could have gone for Brady and they said, well, we just went to the Super Bowl with Jimmy and Brady looks like shit. So, all right, let's run it back. And so I think there is some scar tissue there that's fair, but I do think it's a different scenario.
Yeah, people remember that. Apparently the 49ers don't. Because the 49ers now would obviously have made that move. But they're failing. They failed to do this. You know, they did the same thing twice. They made the same mistake twice, and they did. They asked too much for Ayuk, and clearly they didn't have the intent of giving Ayuk everything he wanted, because they didn't up until the very last second. and they were going to trade him or put him on the restricted list for the entire damn season. And then somehow at the end of it, they're like, actually, you know everything you wanted? Let's just give that to you. Like, they backed themselves into a corner because IU called their bluff repeatedly for months. For months. And so the idea is you had value for him in a trade. That value kept diminishing pretty significantly. You overasked, and you backed yourself into a corner. You got called on your bluff. Trent Williams thing is a Trent Williams thing. You had no alternative. Yep. I really believe that. There was no way that thing was going to end well. When I heard it was 3 years, that was a tough one. But, like, it is what it is. We questioned the McCaffrey thing on the spot. On the spot, we're like, that seemed bold.
Yeah.
Fair enough. They got high on their own supply. Now the only way to dig yourself out of it, because the money is allocated, and it's going to get more allocated with Brock Purdy's new contract. That money's allocated. The only way to build this thing up is through the draft, and you are welcome to have as much skepticism as you want towards the 49ers drafting. They've had two players the 4 years prior to this.
And then they nailed this one, from what we can tell.
From what we can tell. Early returns yet. So, and by the way, you know, we talk all the time about how the coaching staff has seen serious attrition over the years. So has the front office. And John Lynch has accrued more and more power during that time, to the point where John Lynch isn't doing Kyle Shanahan's bidding anymore, but in fact calling the shots on the day-to-day. Now, they did just have a good draft, so maybe that's a good thing, but we don't really know yet. We really don't know. And ultimately, you know, we're not going to talk about the kid that they just picked up on waivers from
Israel Abanaconda. He doesn't look like much.
He fast. I believe the term is JAG, just another guy.
A guy. Yeah. We'll get into in a separate video. We're going to do Isaac Arendo, a little bit of Ricky Pearsall, just to go over some of those guys, because we're going to be seeing a lot of Arendo now, which I honestly think is probably the most interesting thing that's happened to this team over the last 3-4 weeks.
Yes. Well, they lost 72-20. So, yeah. 78, 73. Doesn't matter. It lost a lot to a little.
So, we'll get into that.
We're going to leave it at that. We're going to talk on Friday. I don't know if we're going to break down the game. Should we break down the game?
We'll see. Friday? I might want to get into some sickening Bears tape, but it might be another mini mailbag situation. If you have other questions, leave them in the comments here or the next video.
That's a great one. That's a great call.
So,
let's do that on Friday. If you have questions, big picture, little picture, anything in between, stupid life questions that we can give bad advice to, recipes, I don't know.
Yes. Genuinely, any questions you have. Get weird.
Get as weird and funky as possible. Frankly, the chat hasn't been sick enough.
My guy.
Okay. Y'all talking way too much football.
That's my guy right there.
I know. And he's a pending free agent.
No, I'm talking about Griffin. Just
we knew that. We knew that as well. So put him in there. Put him in there. We'll get to him on Friday. Bang, bang, bang. We'll talk to you then. Looking forward to it. Watch the other videos. God bless America and God help us.
Yeah, that's right.